What's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you? State Senator Tony Wong joins Melissa in the morning right now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
I just want to salute you, Senator Tony Wong, just getting home about an hour ago from our state capitol, and I don't think has gotten a wink of sleep and is joining us now on the air. I do hope you get a nap in at least before you continue your day.
You know what? It's an incredible privilege to serve, and yes, indeed, running a little bit on adrenaline. We finish as of midnight, and obviously a lot of the follow-through, and just getting home about an hour or plus ago, but always a pleasure to be on with you, Melissa.
I appreciate it. So we have a lot to talk about. Let's go to the big picture. Let's go to the bills that did get approval in both the Senate and the House. They are sitting on the governor's desk right now. And then let's talk about what didn't happen. I'm going to call it the losers of the legislative session. And if we have time, I want to go to some hyper-local bills that really has a direct impact on our listening area. So let's start with what in the world happened up in Hartford. What are some big takeaways, would you say, as of midnight last night?
Well, one of the biggest takeaway was the fiscal guardrails that we talked about in regards to how we manage the fiscal house of the state. And the guardrails was to live within our means and not exceed the caps that we put in two areas. One was the, quote, implementer ARPA non-budget, because the budget technically never reopened because of a two-year budget. So we did not exceed the spending cap technically, but what we did was use nearly $300 million of federal COVID ARPA money that would have expired at the end of December this year. And what we did was take that money and apply that to various programs that would have otherwise struggled and suffered. And so for us, the debate was, we were able to give some incremental dollars to nonprofits that sorely needed the additional funds. But also another big component of the implementer ARPA, because we can't call it a budget, was the education. We gave some additional money to education, but also most importantly and most poignantly, we gave additional funds to higher education, to UConn, and also the subsidiary UConn's of Central, Southern, and our community colleges, which were sorely in need of infrastructure and obviously concerns in regards to cost. So the big winner was living within our means on the, quote, budget and not reopening it, using ARPA money, but also living and taking care of those nonprofits, most importantly.
Okay, so yeah, I think that is a huge takeaway, which we've been reporting, is the fact that there was no budget adjustment, which was a huge thing. I know Senate Republicans really didn't want to touch it. And I know even the comptroller, the governor, echoing the same thing. So huge takeaway. When you say the ARPA funds, that is separate from the $360 million, though, in COVID relief funds all going to education within the next year, correct?
That was another part of the biannual budget that was going into it. But also the second part of our fiscal guardrail was bonding. Bonding was debt obligations that we can spread over time that's repaid by taxpayers to the interest rate. And another set of bills related to that was also living within the means of the cap, but focused again on education, higher education, but a couple of other additional areas that was of interest that was important in my mind is that we took care of the consistently poverty-driven communities and to be able to allocate more money and resources. One of the most interesting parts was to take our gambling revenue and be able to devote 2% of that revenue to help youth sports.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting, right?
In the most distressed communities, I thought that was an interesting way to use, in my mind, gambling's ill-begotten gains. So that was part of the bonding, but two separate deals. Budget allocation of appropriations, which is not a budget, which is the funny joke, but also bonding long-term, like infrastructure, transportation, schools, being able to really have fundamental programs in there. So we all lived within the guardrails, and that was critical from the governor and the mandate that we've been given to keep that covenant.
Mm-hmm.
So the winners really was, even though the purported surpluses and all the clamor for additional revenue that's sorely needed for our nonprofits and schools and special education costs, we were able to give incremental money, but not completely, but it was better than none, and that to me was really important.
So we have Senator Tony Huang here, and we're doing a recap of the 2024 legislative session. It was a short session, and really the main goal of a short session is to make sure that there are not budget adjustments. You know, and it sounds like we stayed within our fiscal guardrails. That is something that the Senate Republicans, our governor, our comptroller, Sean Scanlon, all had echoed that from the very beginning of the session. And it sounds like we basically did that. There were some big losers, though. I'm going to say it very bluntly here, Senator Huang. One of the things, and you know this is something very near and dear to my heart, and I was absolutely in conversation with my husband, who is a health insurance broker. I think there were pieces of legislation had very strong bipartisan support, and it went nowhere. And I think the timing of this in particular is pretty awful, considering we just learned this week that two major carriers are now pulling out of the marketplace here in Connecticut, leaving us even less of a chance to find affordable health care coverage for the average Connecticut resident or business. I think that is a big loser, and I wasn't sure if there were other big things that did not happen during the session that people should know about.
One of the biggest frustrations is the ranking on the Insurance and Real Estate Committee. We had a plethora of really good bills and some controversial ones, but the problem was, as well noted, is that none of the bills within the Insurance Committee came out of the committee. So really, we lost opportunities to address small individual health care plans. What you just talked about was called the Association Health Plan that would allow individuals and small businesses to be able to kind of affinity connect and be able to buy group health insurance at a reduced rate. Unfortunately, that got caught up in the political barbs between the industry combination of private sector insurance companies, as well as the implementation of using affinity groups
I can't imagine why.
and chambers of commerces and to be able to buy group rates. That was a fight against what some of the other proponents of is to have a public option, a state-run kind of a program. To me, I think the best combination is utilizing our insurance resources in the private sector combined with kind of natural organic. So that was an area that was a big loss. But there are many other areas, long-term care relief, real estate considerations. That was a bitter, bitter disappointment. Another big disappointment that did not cross the finish line was a couple of real comprehensive environmental bills. There was a bill called the Green Monster, which was a huge compilation of environmental advocacy, climate change initiatives that would have increased incentives and subsidies, but it would have completely changed the landscape. That, unfortunately, did not cross the finish line. Another loser was the governor's bill, Senate Bill 11, that looked at coastal resiliency in really kind of looking at programs and issues that affect potential storm increases that's caused by climate change, and to be able to take some actions within a municipality as well as a statewide basis to protect our coastline against these kind of inclement climate change, weather changes. So that was really the big loser. But overall, it is a short session, mm-hmm. and when we ended, which is probably a third shorter than what is normal in the budget year. And many people just had their hearts broken. And that's the struggle in a short session.
We've got Senator Tony Huang here for a few minutes before hopefully he gets a good nap in before he starts his Thursday. Thank you so much for stopping by, Senator. So let's talk about some very hyper-local bills that did get approval. And it's going to make a huge impact, especially on our listening area here in Fairfield County. I know you represent Fairfield, Easton, parts of Westport, Weston, and Newtown. And some of the bills I wanted to highlight for people. Let's start with the Connecticut Siting Council, a transparency and accountability Accessibility Bill. This comes at a very intense time because, as you know, Fairfield and Bridgeport, they're fighting United Illuminating in their proposed plans of installing monopoles. Could you talk a little bit about this?
Absolutely. And it is one where we looked at electrical transmission lines, and to have the kind of proceedings and transparency and accountability that I felt very strongly was very much lacking on UI's monopole proposal in Bridgeport and Fairfield. And what we did was, through incredible bipartisan collaboration and also from the Judiciary Committee, to be able to look at some reforms that looked at environmental justice communities to be sure that we're considering communities that do not have the resources and the voice to be able to challenge dramatic changes to their community and overall landscape. The other really important part was to be able to let local government and state officials be more engaged in being informed. But it really was a powerful lesson that we need to be better in balancing the overwhelming monopoly power of our utilities against the real impact on consumers that feel as though they don't have a voice. And the Siting Council, which has the omnipotent power of making decisions on where to put power plants and monopoles, needed to be more accountable, more understanding of the challenges, and allow the opportunity for facts to be presented. That's the biggest frustration with this monopole issue in Fairfield and in Bridgeport, is the fact the people did not feel like they had a chance to get all the facts. So this was really a powerful opportunity, and it really was David versus Goliath. We had the utilities with unlimited resources going against these community advocates that deserve to be called out for their inspiration and for their passion, and they deserve tremendous credit. And I want to give a big shout out to many of the communities in Bridgeport and in Fairfield that articulated that. So,
yeah, and actually, really quick, Senator, before we move on to a couple of other ones and run out of time, does this mean that because we know earlier this year, the Siting Council basically approved this updated plan, which would run these monopoles along Metro North, really impacting, again, parts of Southport, Fairfield, and certainly parts of Bridgeport as well. Does this bill, if it gets signed, does this now kind of, you know, mean we go back to square one? Does the Siting Council's decision still stand? Like, what happens with that?
Unfortunately, the Siting Council decision stands, but the interveners who are litigating and presenting the information and data points that were not afforded to them in the Siting Council will be able to use the rationale and the challenges that did not occur in their Siting Council docket review. So it gave them the weight of the legislative support to say, you didn't have an opportunity. Now we're saying use it to your advantage, and that the state and its legislative leaders and policymakers have made that decision that everyone should be afforded moving forward. But looking back, it may be very helpful for them in the litigation.
Okay.
But ultimately, my goal is for UI to come back to the community, to the residents and the town leaders in Bridgeport and in Fairfield,
and give them more options.
You know, let's have this conversation again, how we can create a win-win instead of the win-lose that is right now.
Okay.
So I'm very, very excited about this opportunity. And it truly is bipartisan and bicameral. It's really important to note that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And again, Senator Huang, only because we're running out of time, the other major bill I just wanted to bring attention to, especially because Fairfield has been caught up in this for several years. I remember when even the former first electwoman, Brenda Kupchick, was serving in the House. This was something she also was trying to tackle. This is a major education bill if approved by the governor. It gives towns like Fairfield more time to reassess their responses to Connecticut's racial redistricting laws. It now pushes it until July 1st of 2025. Could you just really quickly talk about the impact of this one?
Absolutely. Our Racial Imbalance Act is something very unique to Connecticut, and it impacts communities. In fact, only four elementary schools that have that racial imbalance. One of them is in Fairfield. The other one's down in Greenwich. And it's important for us to say we're not looking to get rid of that consideration of racial balance, but nevertheless, perhaps we should study and what is the best methodology to be able to address it, because the goal should always be what is in the best interest of the students. So this one-year freeze was based on the consideration of a bipartisan collection of legislators from throughout the state, but also to be able to have the compliments of the Commissioner of Education, who understood that there has to be a better way than uprooting kids and redistricting and causing havoc and social-emotional dynamics. But it really is one that was long in the works. It took years after years and many other former legislators. But ultimately, it's saying that perhaps we should look at another way to ensure that the best resources and best opportunities for a child to succeed in learning is not by forced redistricting. So I'm encouraged about it, but hopefully we'll be able to put some money into it the next fiscal year to be able to do a much more comprehensive study that may take a little longer than a year. But the most important part of it is, for now, one-year hiatus, that there will be no forced redistricting in communities like in Fairfield. And that's really important.
No, it gives people time. And again, that impacts a lot of families. So definitely a huge update. And Senator Huang, we have run out of time, but I know we're going to really, over the next few weeks, continue to talk about bills like the ones that you just mentioned that have a direct impact on our listening area. So I would imagine you'll probably be back on the show before you know it. But before then, I hope you get a lot of sleep. And I thank you again so much for making the time to come on, literally just hours after getting back from the session wrapping up at midnight. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
There will be nobody else I'd be happy to do it for. Your listeners are great. You're terrific. But I think the most important of all is, for regardless of politics and party, people that go up to public service, it's a great honor and privilege. And it's something that I am incredibly thrilled to be able to do. And it's something that I do it every single day. I do it every single time as well. So
we appreciate that, Senator Huang. Thank you. Thank you very much. And as I mentioned, we will, I'm sure, be back in touch with you before you know it. Have a good rest. You deserve it.
Thank you. Thank you. You have a great day.
Thank you. And again, Senator Huang, who represents the 28th District here, which is Fairfield, Easton, parts of Westport and Weston, and Newtown, right here on WICC. And as I mentioned, Senator Huang and many other state senators and state reps will be joining the show over really the next, I would say, week, 2 weeks, to go through a lot of the legislation and really talk about the winners and losers of this legislative session.